And we're joined on The Scoop today by Drew Mahold of Vikings Territory. Drew, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Seth, for having me on.
We've got to start by talking about the Minneapolis Miracle, as it's been dubbed, the unforgettable. I don't know if there's a person in the state of Minnesota, or much less in the United States for that matter, that hasn't seen the final play. Stephon Diggs, with a catch, manages to stay in bounds on the sidelines and runs into the end zone after a couple of Saints defenders run into each other, and the rest is, as they say, history. And it's one of those "where were you" moments. So I think it's only appropriate, Drew, that I start by having us kind of take us through what you were feeling at that point in the game on Sunday.
Well, yeah, I mean, I had kind of started to come to grips with the season, especially after the Saints had gotten that 4th-and-10 conversion on the previous series, and that was kind of when I was like, all right, well, this happened again. It's time to kind of come to grips with the season and the things that, you know, the success that the team did have that we kind of didn't expect. And then you see Case Keenum rifle that pass down the sideline, and when the ball was caught, I said, all right, we'll get out of bounds, we could maybe try a field goal. And you know, like you had mentioned, you saw Diggs kind of creep up the sideline there, and you saw that safety Marcus Williams, you know, fly past him, and Diggs immediately recognized that and went down the sideline for a touchdown. I completely went numb. I was numb for about 5 minutes there. I just didn't know what to think, what to react with. It was unbelievable. It, like you said, one of those things that I will never forget where I was. And I'm still speechless. You can tell. I'm still trying to find the words to really describe what the feeling is. I just hope the Vikings, now moving on, can kind of have come to grips with it, and you know, are moving on faster than I am anyway.
Yeah, we got a big one coming up this weekend against the Eagles. We'll talk about that a little bit more in just a bit. But this entire play, this entire series, set up by the fact that the Vikings had a 17-point lead, and then just like mm-hmm. that, it was gone. Drew Brees came in the second half and put together. Well, I said the same thing with A.J. Mansoor yesterday. Put together one of the best displays of quarterbacking I think I've ever seen. It was reminiscent of Tom Brady against the Falcons in the Super Bowl last year, where yeah. no matter what you're doing, it just seems like he found a way to beat it. So a lot of people, though, are still kind of getting on the defense for allowing them to be in that position. Do you think it's more of the lack of plays made by the defense in the second half, or is it simply a Hall of Fame quarterback getting hot and just putting on a display?
Well, it's going to be both in every one of these situations. I mean, Drew Brees, obviously, I think both the first touchdown to Thomas and then the touchdown to Alvin Kamara over Kendricks, both of those are really, you know, unguardable throws and catches. That, I mean, like I've always said, there's no defense for a perfect throw and perfect catch on a perfect route. So I think that's kind of what those plays told me. But, I mean, when you had the blocked punt, you had the interception, those obviously helped the Saints a lot. But, you know, Mike Zimmer and I think some of the coaching staff after the game did mention that, you know, they couldn't go into their double-A gap look package with Drew Brees because he's seen it all already. He has played against Carolina. And he's seen all these looks before that, you know, it's impossible to disguise it against him. And so Zimmer didn't do a whole lot of that against the Saints. And instead, he just kind of went to basic, you know, two-man defense. And when the pass rush doesn't get home in those situations, it lets Brees kind of sit in the pocket and pick things apart. And that's what happened. So, you know, obviously a lot of it has to do with Drew Brees and that talented offense and them just making plays. But I think Mike Zimmer got a little bit scared of Brees and was a little bit scared to blitz and, you know, really kind of show what his defensive packages are I also think that kind of contributed to that comeback as well.
How important was it for this defense, regardless of what Kamara was able to do, mostly through the screen game, how important was it for them to basically completely neutralize Mark Ingram and make the Saints become one-dimensional?
Yeah, that was the whole, I mean, that's the driving force of that first half was the ability of the defense to stop the run. And, you know, over the past few weeks, Ingram and Kamara hadn't been terribly successful on the ground, and the Saints had still kind of found a way to be, you know, a potent offense. But with any offense that you face, it's very important to stop the run and make them one-dimensional, regardless if your quarterback is Tom Brady or Nick Foles. And I think moving forward to this week, even more so now, stopping the run will be important. But, I mean, Mark Ingram was completely shut out of that game. Kamara did do some damage in the passing game. But, you know, I trust this secondary against any other team in the league at this point to hold teams in check if that running game is shut down the way it has been all season long for this defense. So absolutely a big deal for that defense to shut down Mark Ingram, shut down Alvin Kamara on the ground, force Drew Brees to pass. And, you know, again, to his credit, that's what the Saints did. They threw the ball on the Vikings defense and they were able to make that work. I just don't think many other teams in this league, especially a Nick Foles offense, is going to be able to do that.
Quite the game for Xavier Rhodes. He had the touchdown that he gave up to Michael Thomas after Andrew Sandejo was knocked out of the game on a pick play. And we saw, I think, some interesting things from Rhodes. And not only did he seem to kind of get caught up in the moment, but also... Mm-hmm. You see a guy who is so fierily defending his teammate. What sort of a maturation process did we see from Rhodes to be able to come back from that and then on one of the pivotal series late in the game be able to single-handedly shut the Saints down on three consecutive plays?
Yeah, I think people are forgetting about how well Rhodes recovered from that. I think they, you know, when he and Thomas were matched up on that last series for the Saints, you know, kudos to Zimmer for sticking with Rhodes on Thomas, but, you know, they went after Rhodes over and over, and he shut it down completely, and they forced Brees to look elsewhere, which he ended up doing on that fourth down. But, you know, I think we've kind of been waiting for Rhodes to get, you know, a little bit more of an emotional edge. We saw it a little bit against Odell Beckham Jr., but that was overshadowed by Odell Beckham's emotional immaturity. And so Rhodes has kind of, he's becoming a leader, and I think it's just he's learning how to do it. He's kind of entering his prime here now where it's going to be important to keep those things in check and know when to, you know, be vocal, be emotional, and kind of try and, you know, have that edge, but also know when to keep it in check. And I think he just got a little bit overboard there a little bit. But kudos to him for, you know, overcoming it and correcting it and then locking down Thomas when it really matters. So I think that's the thing I took away from this is that he's going to learn now that, you know, sometimes things happen in games. Sometimes guys get knocked out. It's a physical sport. But at the end, you know, you should, I mean, I think he took it as motivation for himself to lock down Thomas. It just took him a little bit longer for him to do that.
Another tale of Jarius Wright in the game Sunday, too, was you figured that Marshon Lattimore was going to lock somebody down. And I don't know if he necessarily locked down Adam Thielen. Thielen, I think, had something like 70 yards on six catches. Mm-hmm. But we see Jarius Wright not going to be a guy who has a lot of catches on a weekly basis, but he seems to make the biggest catches of the game. And again, he had some huge moments in that game Sunday and some big drive-extending plays that we've just seemed to come to expect from him.
Yeah, this is what Jarius Wright has done his entire career. It's not terribly surprising to me, but I will say that I did not think he was going to make the roster back in August, so I should probably own up to that one. I missed on that one, but, you know, he's the most reliable receiver on this team on third down. He gets it done. He moves the chain. This is not anything new, and I think it's telling now that, you know, I think Treadwell played like 14 snaps in this game, and Wright was close to 40. So I think what this team is starting to recognize is that, you know, Jarius Wright as a third down guy in the slot might be a better option than having Treadwell on the outside and then Thielen or Diggs in the slot. So I think that's something to look forward to against Philly. But, you know, it's, again, this isn't terribly surprising for anybody, really. It's just he's not the big physical guy that can go outside, and that's kind of what limited him. And I think that's why he's been overlooked, is just because he's mainly a slot guy, and that's about it. But when he's on the field, he gets the job done.
One final thought on the Minneapolis Miracle. Case Keenum, man, what a game up and down. He starts off, it seems like he's a little bit nervous, but then he has that interception that just, first thing that I thought of when he threw that pick was that's the game. But then he's able to stay the course and rally back and put the team in position to win the game, which they did. He seems like a guy that just is unflappable, regardless of if he throws two picks, no picks, one pick. He just doesn't seem like he lets any of that get to him, and just is able to keep the team in it and make some huge plays. And I think back to the John Gruden QB camp that's been circulating on Twitter, yeah, that Gruden said, someone's going to give you a chance. And I think we're seeing that with the Vikings, that they've given him a chance, and we're seeing a guy who I think can certainly succeed in this league.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. I think he's a gunslinger, I think, by trade, and by, you know, that's just the way he plays the game. And he took a risk there at that interception. That's kind of what you get with Case Keenum, the good and the bad with those risks. You see it now the past couple of weeks with some of these pass interference calls and whatever. He might not be the most accurate guy down the field, but he's going to take those risks, give his guys a chance to make a play, and give his guys a chance also to draw pass interference. But I think that's what he was trying to do with that Diggs play, because he saw the cornerback bite a little bit on a fake, and then he just kind of lofted, you know, a little bit too much air under the ball. But that's what you get with Case Keenum. You get, you know, you're going to get some really, really good plays out of that, some really bad ones. And I think a really good one that did come of that was the deep play to Diggs, because they've talked about before that, you know, Buffalo right seven heaven was that play call. And they ran that exact play two plays before that, and it was designed to go to Jarius right. And he slipped on the route, and it was incomplete. Case Keenum then recognized in that situation, I have to release this ball down the field to give myself or my team a chance for a field goal, and he put it in the perfect spot for Diggs. So, you know, he didn't play a perfect game. He didn't play, you know, it was probably, for his standards throughout the season, probably an average game. He took a couple dumb sacks, missed a few opportunities, but, you know, he made some really, really good plays when it mattered. The throw to Thielen, where he made that miraculous catch on Lattimore. The throw to Jarius Wright on that deep fade was just perfect. And then obviously the play to Diggs, too. So you have to give credit where it's due. Case responded very, very well after that ugly interception. And I'm not terribly concerned about him in against the Eagles. I am concerned a little bit, though, with, you know, because it's going to be somewhat cold at night there in the 40s. But I think you have to, you know, trust what he can do and have to take something good at least away from that performance down the stretch after the interception, because he responded well, in my opinion.
Taking a look at that matchup against the Eagles, and what we're going to do is we're going to go through biggest key on offense and biggest key on defense. Let's start off on the defensive side of the ball. What is the biggest key for the Vikings defense to be successful against this Eagles offense, which we've seen just shred people throughout the regular season? They lose Carson Wentz, they go to Nick Foles, and now it seems like they're really having to try to grind things out against some of these previous opponents. They won 15-10 against Atlanta in the first playoff game that they had. So what do you think is the biggest key for the Vikings defense in order to be successful?
Yeah, I mean, at first you got to stop the run, stop J.H.I.E. and stop LeGarrette Blount. Those two guys that's a pretty darn good duo of running backs and running game there in Philly. But then I think it was today's press conference or some presser, Everson Griffin said it himself. He said, we're going to make Nick Foles beat us, which means, you know, that means I assume for Mike Zimmer will be the return of his double A gap package, bringing in disguises, bringing in blitzes that Nick Foles won't be able to diagnose like Drew Brees can. And from there, you're making Nick Foles throw the ball down the field, get the ball out quick to guys that he, you know, wouldn't want to get the ball to that quickly. And then, you know, I looked at Nick Foles' pass chart from the Falcons game. He attempted 7 total passes past 10 yards. 2 of them he got relatively lucky deep PI calls. that probably shouldn't have been called. And then he had three completions in total that were past 10 yards down the field. So it's going to be a very congested passing game. They're not going to look deep down the field. They don't trust him there. And his passer rating also when pressured this season is just horribly low. So I think what you do is you get after him. You bring in these disguised blitzes. You bring in that double A gap look. And I think you'll have some success against Foles as long as that running game is kept contained, because if they can go play action, get Foles out of the pocket and moving around, then I think that the Eagles can have some success.
On the offensive side of the ball for the Vikings, they will obviously have their hands full with that front seven for the Eagles. But what is one of the biggest keys for the Vikings offense to sustain some success against the Eagles?
Yeah, I think for the Vikings, you got to, I mean, this is true, again, this is a kind of a cliche thing, but I think it's more true even now, is to avoid, you know, second and long. And I think that kind of falls on Pat Shurmur to, you know, mix it up a little bit on first down. He seems to lately have gone run heavy on first down. And, I mean, McKinnon and Murray combined, I think they're both under 4 yards to carry this season. So while, you know, they have been gaining a lot of aggregate yards, a lot of it is because they've been running the ball a lot. They've been ahead in games, so they've gotten these chunk yards in games, but they need to be more efficient there, and they need to be more efficient on first down. Whether that does mean running the ball more effectively, or it means mixing it up a little bit with your play calling, but then creating then, you know, your third and threes, your third and twos instead of your third and eights. And then I really think one of the receivers, either Diggs or Thielen, is going to have to win against both cornerbacks in Philly. You know, Ron Darby, Jalen Mills, Patrick Robinson, that's a very, very good trio. And they proved it against Julio last week, held him in check. Ronald Darby had a fantastic game against Julio, especially when it mattered, shut him down. So big test for those receivers. And if they can win, and if Keenum can get him the ball for a big play or two in this game, that might be the difference. But I think this is going to be a pretty low-scoring game. So it might just take, you know, two long touchdown drives for the Vikings in this game, something along those lines, and I think that could be enough.
I'm going to I have kind of floated around the 17-14 score as kind of a likely possibility. And after what happened Sunday, why not? I'm going to say that the Vikings win on a walk-off touchdown as time expires. Might as well make it 2 weeks in a row.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
I think that would officially even out the bad luck the Vikings have had in the past you know, all of this good luck from last week is starting to kind of even out, and I think a game-winning touchdown again this week would probably, for sure, even it out.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out, though, Drew. Thanks for joining the show today. Fans can check out your work at Vikings Territory. I know you mentioned the school scale coming out today, one of my favorite segments of the week. So looking forward to all of that. We'll see how things go, but hopefully we get a chance for the Vikings to take it home, as has been kind of their rallying cry here. But we'll see how it all breaks down.
Thank you very much, Seth, for having me on. And I can't wait till next time. Hopefully we're talking about the Super Bowl.